Hey everybody, welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I am your co-host Chris, and as always, I am joined by my brother and co-host Rob. What's up, Rob?
Am I Rob, or am I Rob 6.6? 616.
616.
Fucked it up.
Yeah, that's good. You're definitely not Rob 2.0. We promised you last week that we would be talking about Last Night at Soho.
Last night in Soho.
God, I can't say it right.
Should we just start over?
That's a real... No. We're going. That's just a preview for next week. We are going to hold off on that one and have that for you next week because we just saw Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So we thought with that fresh in our minds, we wanted to talk about it today and get that out to you right away because I know everybody's waiting.
Yeah. Our listeners demand it. They demand both of us screwing up things within the first minute and then giving them the newest movie reviews.
High class. Yeah. So before we talk Doctor Strange, we're going to cram a little top five down your throat. And yeah, that's unpleasant. Rob, what's our top five going to be today?
Our top five, because I'm sure we'll talk about the post-credits, mid-credits sequences of this movie later on. We're going with our top five post-credit sequences from the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. So, again, and as you said, post-credits and mid-credits, so... I didn't restrict it strictly to what comes after the credits, but yeah, you want to start us off with your number five?
Sure.
you?
If I can. I will go with the Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it is... we have already at this point seen Avengers Infinity War, and the post-credit sequence has Scott Lang / Ant-Man going into the quantum realm while Michelle Pfeiffer and the other two are hanging out inside the van and thinking that they're going to bring him back. And poof, they go to dust. And yeah. Poor Scott, it's stuck in the quantum realm. And it was just a cool setup for how he would play into the Infinity two of the last Avengers movies, because he didn't appear in the first, and so it was interesting to see how he would end up playing into the second, which was significantly.
Yeah, that's kind of falls into, there seem to be sort of three categories of these. Maybe I'm missing some, but you get sort of things like that that are setups for the next movie, which work really well. You get just silly sort of sidebars that are just there for fun. And then you get the worst of them is where they just have a clip from the next movie. They didn't even go to the effort of filming something different.
So,
I like that one. It did set it up really well.
All right. What's your number five?
My number five is one of the newer ones, and that's from Shang-Chi. And it's the moment at the end where you think that they're going to start to do some serious planning on what's going on and what's happening next. But instead, they just go with Wong to sing karaoke.
Yeah.
And it was such a big laugh in the theater when we saw it. It really, really worked well. And it was especially funny to see Wong going in with them and just singing and having fun, and that was a really funny one.
He's become a big favorite of mine.
Yeah,
because he's appeared in I mean at least like five or six of these movies at this point, and he's always, you know, a secondary character, but he's funny and he kind of kicks ass. Mm-hmm. and he apparently does some underground magic wrestling.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would have explained some of that in this new Doctor Strange, but no, we didn't really get any of that.
I don't need an explanation. It's just his side gig. It's like how some people have their jobs and then they'll like Uber at night. Mm-hmm. Wong fights the Abomination.
It's his side hustle.
Yeah.
All right.
I will say that when we came up with this top five, I kind of thought I would go back and be like, oh, yeah, this was my favorite one because it really set up this next movie. And there is a lot of that, but those didn't tend to be my favorite ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got one or two of those, but most of mine are just so ridiculous. So what's your number four?
This one actually does play into the following movies, but I'm going with Captain America, the First Avenger.
Okay.
And it's when Steve wakes up in the hospital bed thinking that he's in the 1940s after his plane has gone down in the Arctic. And it's slowly revealed. I forget what it is. There's a baseball game on the radio, right, that he figures out is.
Yeah, I think
has already happened and wakes up and finds out he's basically in a. I don't know, like a movie studio, like a fake set.
Yeah, it was kind of an elaborate ruse for almost no reason, but.
Yeah, it's mainly for the audience.
Yeah.
To ease Steve into what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But he runs out and he's in modern day Times Square and Nick Fury stops him and talks to him about what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a cool way to end what was essentially a World War II MCU movie.
Yeah. My number four in similar vein is the post-credit scene from Infinity War. And that's Nick Fury getting dusted. And
yeah.
It was a great scene just to show kind of concurrently with what was going on with the Avengers as what was going on in the rest of the world. And it was really stood out for two reasons. One was the setup of seeing the pager and knowing that Captain Marvel was coming. And the other was Samuel Jackson getting cut off saying, motherfucker.
Yes.
I thought that was very clever. That's all. How about your number three?
My number three, now I'm trying to remember if this is a post-credits, mid-credits, or maybe even like just straight up during the credits. Okay. So our listeners can correct me or just yell at their radio, iPod, whatever.
Sure.
But it's at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 when Kraglin is using the Yondu's little mohawk to control the arrow. And he accidentally stabs Drax with it.
Yeah.
In the shoulder. And it just keeps cutting back and forth between the two of them. And Drax is just screaming constantly. There's just something so funny to me about it. It just keeps going.
Drax is so funny in that movie to begin with, but
oh god,
no,
he edges Volume 2 into the favorite position of those movies for me.
Yeah,
I think the first one's probably the better movie, but he's so damn funny in that second one.
Yeah, he's great.
Okay, all right, number three for you.
My number three is a movie that not everybody loves, but I really love it, and it's Iron Man 3. And the post-credits in that is where, because Tony has been narrating the story the whole time, and you just assume that he's narrating it, but you come to find that he's actually been telling the story the whole time to Bruce Banner, and it cuts to Bruce, and he's fallen asleep and missed the whole story. And
yeah.
I just thought it was such a clever, like, sort of way to frame the movie, and so hilarious that he was like, oh, so take me back to what was going on with the conference, which was the start of the movie, and Tony's all bent out of shape. It's just great. So
that's and it was just a surprise to see Mark Ruffalo in there.
Yeah. All right, your number two.
My number two is actually the very, very post-credit scene in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And so I will wait to talk about that till later.
It really is right up there with everything else.
And it's more just personal to me than anything. Yeah. It has zero bearing on anything that happens in any of these movies, but it's so great.
It really was great. Number two Spider-Man Homecoming, and it is Captain America doing sort of the public service announcement because he was featured in the movie in like the health and gym class, kind of, you know, sitting backwards on the chair, rapping with the kids. And this is the one that, again, it's so silly because he's just talking to the audience about how ridiculous it is that they've waited there for nothing. it was just a great kind of fourth wall break. And those really crack me up.
I love that he's wearing like the nerdiest version of his costume.
Yeah, it's like the original Avengers one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So ridiculous. All right, which number one?
My number one is Shawarma.
Okay.
From the original Avengers.
And that is also my number one.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, it could easily be the more important of those, which is Thanos turning to look at the camera, which is the kind of mid-credits scene. And basically, my understanding is Joss Whedon kind of threw that in there as sort of like, oh my God, without having like a real plan of how it would all play out. Mm-hmm. And yet that's how huge first part of these movies ended up playing out.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a cool wink when you go back and watch it, being like, oh my God, this is how, like, where it all started.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's the Avengers quietly eating shawarma in a little restaurant.
An interesting tidbit about that scene is that it was filmed much later than the rest of the movie. They kind of threw it in at the last minute as a joke. And Chris Evans had gone on to film, I think, Snowpiercer.
Yeah. In
which he had a full beard and mustache. So if you look really closely at him, they have made sort of a prosthetic mouth that goes over his chin to hide his beard. And he's got one hand sort of resting against his chin that's hiding it even a little bit better.
He's kind of like turned away partially from the camera.
Yeah, if you know that it's there and you can kind of see what he's doing to hide it and what they've done with makeup, that's kind of a fun.
I feel like somebody starts to break like right at the end of that scene.
Oh, really? I don't remember. It might
be him.
It's fun.
It was so early in that series that I feel like Joss Whedon threw in these little bits, and that being the last moment you see in that movie sort of sets the tone for, okay, these movies are going to be awesome and action-packed and full of character moments, but they're also going to be kind of fun.
Yeah. And that really played into what you were talking about with the post-credits in this movie that we'll get to shortly, but...
Dear God. Most people will hate that they waited around, but
well, for and somebody that's, like
you and I.
Yeah, well, I loved it too. And I had this feeling because I've sat through a lot of these with my wife, who has no patience for post-credit scenes. And anytime it's one that comes up that is completely ridiculous or useless, like I think she got really mad when we watched Captain Marvel, because I think it gets all the way to the end before, and I think the post credits is the cat scratching
scratching Fury in the eye.
And it was so stupid, and she was so mad at me for making her sit there. And when this post credits popped up, she almost flipped out and killed me.
Because even stuff like in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where like, there's a lot of ridiculous things at the end, but then there's the Adam Warlock kind of tease.
Right.
So I feel like even the things that will maybe impact future movies, someone like your wife is not going to be like, oh, wow, they're going with this character. Going with
Adam Warlock? Like,
so it's even worse when it's just something pointless. Like Stan Lee is with all the Watchers.
Yeah.
Where they just get bored and start walking away from him.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Well, let's talk Doctor Strange.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have not seen this, it's just out this weekend. So when we're recording this, it's only been out a few days. So there's a chance you haven't seen it. I would highly recommend going to see it. I assume you would, too.
Very much so, now, yes. If you're a fan of these movies, it's essential viewing, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, really, really fun movie. So if you're going to see it, go see it, and then come back and visit us, because we will be spoiling this shortly. But spoiler-free reactions from you.
I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to, and partially because this was the most excited for a movie I've been in a while. I'm a huge fan of Batman. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed The Batman, and yet this is a movie I was much more excited to see.
Okay.
Just because of who is directing it. Sam Raimi, who's a guy that you and I both love. Just the fact that it looks so crazy, and but then I had read some reviews that were kind of lukewarm on it, so I kind of tempered my expectations. But I went in and enjoyed just the hell out of it. It's got its problems, but so much to love, at least for me, that it outshined any of the negative aspects for me.
Yeah.
I think Benedict Cumberbatch, I think Elizabeth Olsen are both very strong. We just talked about Wong, whose name I'm spacing Benedict's. Benedict Wong.
I gotta look it up now. I feel bad.
Is great. The action is particularly, I think, a lot of fun, and there's a lot of fun. Sam
Benedict Wong. Sorry.
Okay. So I'm not racist.
No, a little.
A little. A lot of fun. Sam Raimi flourishes throughout. Oh, I think you and I were talking earlier about how I feel like it's very much an MCU movie. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of, I feel like most of the movies are sort of director for hire. And we've talked about this before. Even Iron Man 3 has Shane Black written all over the script. But in terms of how it's shot and the action and the plotting, is a little bit more in line with this is what we're doing as a movie series. But Sam Raimi definitely snuck in a few of his signature bits.
Yeah, he really did. Those were probably my favorite parts of it, were just being able to see some of the camera movements and some of the ridiculous Sam Raimi nonsense was so fun. It'd and be interesting. I mean, again, we were talking about some night in Soho. I can never remember.
Last week in Soho.
Yeah, and so it's again, we'll talk more about that next week. But there's a lot of anytime I see an Edgar Wright movie, I always wonder about what could have been with him directing Ant-Man, which he was originally set to do and then dropped out basically because it sounded like they weren't going to let him make it the way he wanted to make it. And I think this goes to show that you can have a movie like this that fits the mold, but you can still have a director put their own stamp on it.
Yeah.
And again, I wish that would have happened with him, but here we are.
Speaking of Edgar Wright, this is an aside, but he has to be a Sam Raimi fan, right?
I would think so. I mean, especially when you look at Shaun of the Dead and sort of the, he does a lot of those same sort of, you know, there's parts in Shaun of the Dead where they'll just hold up like a weapon, a bat or a gun, and they'll do this like quick zoom in on it. Right. Yeah. And that's very Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, sort of the quick montage of somebody suiting up to go fight the villain.
Right.
So Sam Raimi, where was I going with this? There were some genuine, apparently you looked at the poster for this movie and figured out everything about it.
Yeah, jeez. But
I had not looked that far into it, so there were some genuine surprises, quite a few for me.
Mm-hmm.
That I enjoyed.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Same thing. I really liked it. Like you said, some issues. I have two major issues that we'll talk about that were, and I say major like they were big issues, but they also involved big portions of the plot. So that got me a bit, but I still enjoyed the hell out of it. A lot of fun. Great character work, great acting by the two leads. And I even liked the new young lady who played America Chavez, and I don't know how to pronounce her name. It's got an X and a bunch of other vowels in it.
Sochi? Yeah.
Okay, Sochi Gomez. She was delightful. I thought she really held her own with these big fancy actors. Really looked great. Rachel McAdams, fun to see. So everything about it, I enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend it. So, and
I think some spoilers.
Yeah, from here on out, we're going to be spoiling it. So if you have not seen the movie, go watch it, come back and listen to us. But spoilers from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised right off the bat with the turn from Wanda. I knew, I mean, there'd been a lot of rumors about what her role was going to be and that she might be the villain in the movie, or at least have some dark turns. I had no idea that she was going to be the villain. So it was bold. What did you think?
I kept waiting for the moment in the movie that they would reverse time or use the multiverse to change what she had done, because she kills good people in this movie.
Yeah,
like innocents. Yeah, a lot. And her ultimate goal is to basically steal the power from, and which will ultimately end up killing America Chavez, and which is quite villainous. She even kills like Reed Richards and Captain Marvel, like some major heroes. And you and I were talking earlier about how a lot of what they did sort of betrays or backpedals on stuff that happens in WandaVision. Which I don't like.
Yeah.
But aside from WandaVision, if they just went directly to this, I think it's interesting. And I think it aligns with the comics a lot more, where there's certain characters like Wanda who jump back and forth between being a villain and being a hero. Silver Surfer is, one of those characters. There's all sorts of characters in the Marvel comics that sort of vacillate between these two worlds, or sometimes Magneto may be an ally to the X-Men.
Right. Namor, I think, is one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting. And I almost, like you said, it was bold. I think it was interesting that they went with that route. I think, again, had WandaVision not happened, and maybe they just referenced her creating her two sons or something. And maybe not resolving that in WandaVision and going straight to this, I think it would have worked a little bit better. Yeah. But I think it gave a good structure to the plot, having her be the villain and also having her be a very tragic villain.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
Though she had some horrible things.
It did. It made sense to me what they were doing. But as I was telling you before, I think that when I say it was like a bold choice, not what I would have thought of, but definitely they went with it. I feel like I made that same excuse when I got to the end of WandaVision, when I was like, okay, well, that was, they really, you know, did something surprising and bold. But I felt like they left WandaVision with her regretting what she had done and understanding the issues that she had created. And there was just so much character growth for her that was completely thrown out the window in this, and kind of wrapped in an excuse of, well, she has the Darkhold, which is the evil spell book, and that's sort of taken over her mind. And that they kind of threw that out there, almost as an excuse for what was going on. And then it was just right back to where she was with WandaVision. So I was like, well, she, there was just no growth to what they had done all this character building with her for years, only to just kind of throw it out the window here. And like I keep saying with a lot of these Marvel movies, I like the execution of what they were doing. They did a great job with what their plan was and how it was presented. But I don't know that I'm fully on board with what the plan was originally. I had that same issue with some of the last Spider-Man movie. And again, definitely with this, with Wanda.
Where was I going with this? with WandaVision, I got to the end of it. And she kind of sets things right in Westview. Is that
name of the town?
And she hasn't killed anyone. She hasn't injured anyone. But she has really fucked with some people's minds in like a big way. And she sort of walks through the crowd like, oh, sorry, guys. I feel kind of bad about this. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're kind of shitty about all this. Like, I get it. I get the trauma that you suffered with Vision and losing him and all this stuff. But you were naughty here. you were kind of a villain. And then in this, they were like, oh, you think that was bad?
Yeah.
Well, let's get worse.
Well, because I remember at the end of WandaVision thinking that even then she didn't quite get her comeuppance.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, well, she deserves to be punished, or she deserves some sort of suffering because of what she's done at that point. But I didn't feel that she was beyond redemption.
Right.
Now, after this, I kind of feel that she's beyond redemption. And I'm sure that they could come up with a clever way if her story were to continue, of something that she could do. Because, I mean, you look at like Loki killed a lot of people and did a lot of terrible things. And now we all love Loki. So there's ways to write it in and to make them redeemable. But I think I don't know how open-ended it was for her at the end of this. I thought that she died. And I've heard different opinions on it since then. But what do you think?
I rarely believe in movies like this that if a character dies off screen, like if you don't see their body crushed and blood spatter, that they're still okay. And comics and these sort of movies are notorious for somebody died, but they're actually back, or they had a clone. And I mean, fucking even Vision in WandaVision,
right?
This white Vision out there.
So assuming she did survive, because she's powerful enough to survive a building collapsing on her. Assuming that she did make it out, do you think that there's a path that they redeem her, or is she going to continue to be a villain, or what? Because again, she had that sort of heroic turn at the end of this, even by destroying the building and walking away from it all. But is that enough to be like, all right, I'm cool with Wanda now?
Okay, so I should say that I do think that she's dead.
Okay.
I prefaced all that with, oh, if you don't see him die, but I do feel like that she's dead.
Okay.
She brought a big ass building down on herself. I feel like, given the fact that she sacrificed herself in such a big way at the end, and how they led up to that with her facing the alternate reality version of her, or the other dimension version of her, it led me to believe that, yeah, she is redeemed in a certain sense.
Okay.
So I think you could, if she somehow survived, get to that point. I also think it's interesting that, I want to get back to your opinion on whether she can be redeemed if she survived.
Okay.
But at the very beginning of the movie, we see an alternate universe Strange, who, while he's trying to do something good on the whole, basically is stealing the power from and killing America.
Yeah.
Not the USA, but the character America. he's a real communist that can go back. And then so much of the movie, we see all these different Stranges who have either done the wrong thing, are straight up evil, whatever the case may be. And then we have this one Strange in our universe, quote unquote, our universe, who's a good dude. And then with Wanda, we do see this other universe version of her that is sort of the idyllic sitcom version of Wanda from WandaVision, where she's just a good mom and she has these two sons. And I don't know. It was just an interesting way to look at it, that, yes, the one in the universe that we've been following is generally pretty good and has gone astray, and I think sees this good version of herself, and that's what sets her straight. And it is, she goes in a dark way in this movie, and it sucks, and it kind of breaks your heart to see, but I think that's what made it work for me, is because I love her character, which is a character I did not think I would care about when she was first introduced, but I've really grown attached to over the Avengers movies and then WandaVision, that the emotional beats where she was actually a character and not just like a zombie going through hallways really worked for me. So it was weird, it was different, but ultimately I think it worked for me, and I understand why it wouldn't work for other people.
Yeah.
Can't fault them, and I can't fault for you how you feel about it, certainly.
Oh, and again, I'm okay with, again, the execution of what they did. It just makes me sad when they work so hard on character development and then throw it out the window. But I didn't even think about that point of how she sees the ideal version of her, and that's what sort of corrects her path. And it's interesting that Strange is the opposite of that, that he keeps seeing these terrible versions of himself, and that sort of corrects him, because he's concerned about where he's going, and there's a lot of talk about his arrogance and his not willing to believe in other people, and they keep saying has to be the one holding the knife, and in the end he finally sort of turns it over to America and says, believe in yourself, and so it's interesting that how those two parallel each other. But
Okay, So back to what you were saying, could Wanda be redeemed?
Oh, I don't
should
know.
She be alive?
I'm not even sure. I like I said, I think that there's probably a path that they could write to show that if they can redeem Loki, they could probably redeem anybody. And certainly the way she went out, it left her in a better place than had Strange just killed her while she was continuing to be awful. But it's a tough one. I mean, she really did some shit there.
I mean, she already kind of went from tragic villain to hero, back to villain, whereas Loki went from tragic villain to villain to hero.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. There's a lot of, again, I kept trying to give it the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes with these movies, especially the further we get into them and the more convoluted the canon becomes, and, it becomes more and more like the comics where people start dying and coming back and people become good and people become bad. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really follow the common through lines that movie series do.
Yeah.
It's the MCU is its own thing. For better or for worse, and it's becoming less and less mainstream where somebody like my wife Mo, I have to sort of pick and choose, like, okay, this is one you can watch with me because you don't have to have seen 10 different things and be on board with all these different twists and turns.
Yeah.
Because this one in particular, this one was the first one to actually basically require you to have seen a Disney Plus series, right?
It is, yeah, I think so. There were little bits like in the post-credits scene in Black Widow that had Julia Louis-Dreyfus in there.
Oh, that's
But again, it was, you could kind of figure it out. This one you really had to sort of at least be primed on what the hell happened in WandaVision and why she was doing what she was doing. Another plot thread that they left dangling from WandaVision is Vision. And where was he? And it was funny because walking out of this movie, one of my kids asked me, well, you know, she was looking for the kids and that was driving her, but why wasn't she looking for Vision? Yeah. And my answer was that Marvel didn't want to pay Paul Bettany to be in this movie.
They didn't want to pony up the Paul Bettany bus.
Exactly. But then when I really thought about it, I thought, I mean, it bothered me that if she's gone and she's not going to be in these anymore, it bothers me a bit that he's still out there. And that was a whole plot point that is now lost. But it occurred to me that had he been part of this, either in our world, the White Vision coming and you know, interacting with her, or if she searched out a parallel universe where she and Vision were raising the boys and having that happy family, that I don't think it would have worked, because I think Vision would have been the one to talk her down off the ledge.
Yes.
You know, he instantly would have said, this is not right and we got to stop this. So again, I understand the reasoning of not having him in there, but it does seem a little out of character for her.
Yes. And I didn't think about that till after the movie.
Yeah.
I think it just would have made it, just in terms of this being a singular movie, it would have made it more complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
And I was surprised at the runtime of this movie. It was barely over 2 hours.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
And they packed a lot in, especially for a movie that is literally about a multitude of different universes.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you look at, what was the newest Spider-Man?
The nudist Spider-Man.
Which is a movie I want to see. Because I want to see Andrew
Spider-Man
Garfield's
nude at home.
Fat dong. where I feel like it was like 2.5 hours. It was
I think so.
So it was good to see a shortened MCU movie like
this. We haven't really talked about Doctor Strange himself much. It's all been Wanda. He was, you know, he was great in this. He's the same as he usually is. I like the different Stranges, and I didn't feel that his character growth was nearly as strong as it could have been. Again, a lot more of that heavy lifting was done by Wanda, but he was good. He's always great.
Yes. Yeah, he was solid. Wanda had maybe the bigger character arc. Mm-hmm. America Chavez. Does she have like a superhero name?
I think that's it.
Okay. I mean, she's America.
Yeah.
So much of it was his relationship with her, and like you said, kind of pushing her to hone her powers and trust in herself, which sounds so cliche. Trust in yourself.
And when he got to that point that he told her that, was there a moment of recognition where he realized that she'd been taking them all to the places they need to be, or did he just? I didn't feel like I almost felt like the movie skipped over that. Like I don't know if he earned that moment where he told her, "Oh, just believe in yourself because you've been doing it all along." It seemed a little bit oddly convenient.
Yeah, I don't know if he himself had a moment where, as the audience, we go, oh, he realized it.
But yeah.
He does, or somebody mentions to her, like, have you realized that you keep bringing us to the place that we need to be? So
I think he does when he tells her that, like, to believe in herself. Which, again, makes sense. It explains that moment. But I felt like they could have thrown in that aha moment for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have made it less cheesy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I liked her a lot. I thought she was great. You know what cracks me up in these movies? And this is a total aside. But after Wong and Strange save her from the giant one-eyed octopus monster.
Yeah.
Then they sit down and chat with her just in like a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in their full costumes, and it to me
nobody comes up to him.
Nobody's bothering them, and even they do weave some of that in, like when he comes out of the sanctum and he's walking through the streets of New York. They'll have somebody in the background kind of looking at him and whisper to their friend and point at him and things like that. And so I like that they don't completely ignore it and act like it's super normal that they're there. But in the same breath, it's like, it made me think of the scene in Endgame where they're sitting there having lunch with the Hulk in the diner.
Yes.
And again, the kids come up and ask for an autograph and a picture. But it's so just normalized in these movies that it cracks me up. It would be like seeing somebody famous out to eat. It would be like seeing like Obama out to eat, and you're just like, what? He was the president. What's he doing in a Denny's? Like, what is going on here? I don't understand. Like
if Obama and Brad Pitt and Taylor Swift all turned out to have superpowers and save the planet, and we're hanging in the Denny's and nobody went up to him.
Exactly. It's always just so funny to me that they're just chilling in their superhero outfits in a restaurant. So on America, real quick to point out, and again, I think this is less about Disney trying to do the right thing and more about Disney just reading the room correctly anymore. But I still appreciated the fact that you could see on her jacket, she had the LGBTQ flag pin, and that they had the flashback with her with showing that she had the two mothers. And because I know that there were other countries that would not accept this movie unless they trim that stuff out. And Disney just flat out said, no, we're not doing that. More, I believe, because of the firestorm they'd have to deal with if they did cut it out. But at least it's there. seeing things like that, seeing the wedding scene at the beginning where Christine is marrying an African-American man. I mean, stuff like that, I feel like they're, I don't know if they're doing it to try and do the right thing, but I think they're making progress. So it was a small thing in this movie, but I think it meant a lot to see that kind of stuff on the screen.
I think they're trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I also, and this is coming from a straight white man's perspective, but I feel like they're doing it in a way that doesn't hit you over the head. Yes. And it almost means more. Like, I talked to my daughter about how some of her friends have, they may have two daddies. Uh-huh. They may have two moms. Maybe they live with grandma and grandpa. Like, just sort of normalizing it and making it not seem weird.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's that. There's the moment in whatever the last Star Trek movie was. And George Takei was not happy about it, strangely, where Zulu had a husband.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about? I forgot about that.
It's just like a one-off thing, kind of not in the background necessarily. You clearly see that he's in love with a man, but they don't comment too much on it. And I hope that my kids grow up seeing things like that, or seeing things like this in this movie, where it's just, oh yeah, she happens to have two moms.
Yeah,
and that's how it is. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so total side note, but I thought that was nice. So, okay, let's.
America. I was just thinking. I had been reading reviews about Moon Knight.
Okay.
Which is a whole other fucking thing.
Yeah,
jeez. But in this review, they were talking about how the female lead in that show, the character's name is Layla. They were talking about how charismatic she was and how great she was. And I'm just, the whole time I'm just going, really? She wasn't that great. And then watching this movie and seeing America, I was like, oh, she's great. She's lovely. She's charming. She kicks butt. Like, this is a female character that I can get behind and I think could be, and was written well. And the actress played it very well.
Anyway, I feel like they're priming her for maybe her own Disney Plus series, or at least just weaving her into this. I was glad that she was still there at the end. I wasn't sure if they were going to send her back to some other universe, because that was just her power to be jumping through universes. But I like that she was at Kamertage trying to train with the wizards. Didn't seem to be doing a good job of it, but but it was interesting. I was just glad that they kept her around. So in the Kamertage scene when Wanda first comes there to attack, there's like a Minotaur.
Yeah. Don't worry about that.
I know. I just, what was going on there? Why is there, I like the idea that there might be other creatures that are magical that would train with them or fight with them, but why was it just the one? And why was he green? Made me think of the Arrested Development, the Die-A-Pet thing.
Apparently he's a character from the comics.
Yeah, I figured.
But I did have that thought of he was the only one, and I don't know. I was thinking, like, they go out and into the regular world. It's not like they're going to send this Minotaur out to hang out in San Francisco or something.
And that's the thing. They all seem to be, it's not like they're recruiting them from the multiverse. They're all like wizards. I mean, the rest of them are just humans that have wandered in there or been recruited to Kamertage. And then they were just like, I don't know, somebody find me a goddamn Minotaur.
Maybe it's not a Minotaur. Maybe a woman fucked a bull. I don't know.
That's true. That makes a lot of sense.
There's ligers. There could be.
Yeah.
Be so, human bull hybrid.
That was just a weird aside, but
that's how science works.
And then he was credited like in the credits of the movie. I mean, everybody, all the other like above the title credits people were there, and then they threw in a couple him, and then there was the one lady who had sort of kind of an odd look, the one who stabbed the book and burnt to death. Who must be, and then whoever was the voice or whatever of the Minotaur, they got like a joint credit on the. And so I don't know if it was
like somebody, they flashed their pictures. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if they were both kind of starting to be well known from other things, but that one threw me off. I don't know what that was about. So, let's
talk Sam Raimi.
Okay, let's talk Sam.
Okay.
How did you like? I loved the little flourishes, zooming in on a door that slams shut with the camera at a jaunty angle. Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff gets me. Wanda coming out of that relic, like the thing from the ring.
Yeah.
And then like that. Doing that wiggling, like disjointing her arms and legs like a witch out of a Sam Raimi movie. So
That whole scene where she was coming after him within kind of the, I don't know, inner sanctum or whatever, and they were covering up all the mirrors, and then America looks down and there's just a tiny puddle, and her eye kind of pops up in it. I was like, oh my god, that is so up until that point it was, there were a few little things where they're fighting the big octopus thing in New York. It was just pieces of buildings being pulled down that felt very Spider-Man-ish.
Yep. I had the same feeling.
But aside from that, there wasn't a whole lot that was like, oh, this is a Sam Raimi movie. But once we got into that bit, it felt very much, like you said, when it would zoom in on the door slamming shut.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. Here he is.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a couple of good jump scares in there. When Wanda, later in the movie, like, comes up behind somebody and grabs them. I can't remember.
Patrick Stewart?
Might have been, yeah. But I don't know. It was just, there was some good stuff like that.
Her just going through, chasing Strange and Rachel McAdams in America through those hallways. She was kind of like hobbling along, which didn't totally make sense. She's so powerful. But she kind of has like blood or Ultron oil on her face. I don't know.
But they kind of hobbling her, like it was like Jack Nicholson chasing him through the hotel in The Shining.
For sure. There was some good stuff like that.
Yeah. The whole thing with the most Raimi thing was the demons that were attacking him when he was using the Darkhold at the end. Even the way they would talk to him had that screeching witch voice from every Sam Raimi movie. I'll steal your soul, that kind of thing. So.
That you've seen Drag Me to Hell, right?
I have. That's a good movie.
There was a lot of stuff that felt very much like Drag Me to Hell. Even just Sam Raimi-ness with evil books. There were so many evil books in this movie that were getting stabbed and spells and incantations.
The interesting thing I thought in terms of just the book design was the book he was trying to find that was like the good book, not the Bible, the antithesis of the Darkhold. I can't remember what they kept calling it, but it was sitting on this pedestal that had these, it almost looked like beams of light coming around it. It looked like a classic, like Catholic, like
tabernacle. Icon.
Yeah, like a tabernacle or what they would take. Like there's this tradition in the Catholic Church where they would have like a bone from St. Peter's foot or something. And they would put it in a container and it would be set into an ornate thing with it. It almost looked like radiating light coming off of it. And it really made me think of that, those sort of relics of the church. So I thought that was just a cool design and interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I had thought of it as, man, we're really going back to our Catholic schooling.
Yeah.
But they would do adoration where they would have like a host.
Yes.
The body of Christ. And it was in front of this very ornate type thing. But yeah, they would definitely do it with like relics and stuff like that.
So that was interesting. The most Sam Raimi thing, I think, of the whole movie was the presence of Bruce Campbell. And that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier, about that post-credits scene.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that, since that was your...
Well, I... so, I mentioned earlier there were some surprises. that's a Party Down reference. Anyway, so Wanda being the villain to me was a surprise. And then I'll talk about the other surprise in a second here. But yeah, Bruce Campbell, I don't know why it came as a surprise. As soon as he popped up, my thought was, of course, how did I not see this coming? But he was what was he say? He was in an alternate universe.
He was selling pizza?
Yeah.
His name was listed, I think he was called like Pizza Papa.
Pizza Papa.
That's what he was referred to as.
And he plays Bruce Campbell selling pizza in a different universe. And Strange puts a hex on him that makes him punch himself, which is... like you said, so Sam Raimi. It's basically Evil Dead 2, where he's fighting himself and flipping himself over. And it's so silly. And then the post-credits, he eventually stops punching himself, looks at the camera, and what does he say? It's finished or it's over?
I think it's done.
It's done,
it's over or something. And then that's just how the movie ends.
And so it was very much a... it's almost like Sam Raimi convinced Kevin Feige to be like, hey, let me put this in there for Bruce Campbell fans.
It was the silliest thing. I think his presence in like got a bigger reaction from the audience than some of the other surprise cameos in that from us where we were. But God, that was funny.
Other cameos?
Yeah, because I think that is my other kind of issue with this movie.
Okay.
And I thought they were fun. So again, this is a big spoiler, not that anything we have talked about is not, but we all knew that Patrick Stewart was coming. And again, there's another complaint about do they ruin too much with the advertising in these movies?
They
certainly did. It would have been so incredible if we didn't know Patrick Stewart was coming, because my wife didn't know. And when he came on screen, she let out this shriek that deafened the whole place. It was incredible. But I think the biggest surprise was John Krasinski as Reed Richards, which, again, there's been rumblings of that for years, and people had that feeling that he might be in this, at least the character might be in this, but to really see him there and have it not have been spoiled was great. That was really awesome to see.
I was very surprised that that hadn't been spoiled.
Yeah.
The fact that it was just sort of like fan casting in a big way over the years of being like, oh, he would have been Captain America, I'll make him Reed Richards. I was still very surprised that he popped up.
Yeah, he was really good at it, too. Like, I mean, it really worked well. Mm-hmm. And then we had that guy, Black Bolt, from The Inhumans, which... if anybody listening to this had seen The Inhumans, you might be the only one. But that was kind of amazing that they were like, let's, from this totally failed show, let's throw that guy in there.
Yeah.
So that was fun. And then obviously we had the alternate Haley Atwell as Captain Carter, which was fun to see. Mm-hmm. And Lashana Lynch as the alternate Captain Marvel. Again, all those were super fun to see.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun. I like that. What do we call her? Captain UK?
Captain Carter, I think is what they went with.
Okay.
Yeah. Captain,
I like Captain UK better.
Yeah.
Captain Northern Ireland. I like that she kind of held her own against Wanda for a bit.
Yeah.
Before getting cut in half.
Cut in half.
I liked that scene. I like that Wanda, she basically explodes Reed Richards.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Black Bolt's head caves in.
That was a great kill.
Yes. Like, that felt very horror movie-ish.
Yeah.
That whole scene. You had mentioned going in, so I saw this a day before you did, and you have a daughter, a young teenage daughter who is not a big fan of kind of horror movies and was hesitant to go see this because she thought it might be too scary. How did she do with it? Because there was definitely some horror-ish stuff with this.
Yeah, I noticed her a lot of times hiding behind her coat and gently peeking out to see what was going on. So a couple of the jump scares got her, but basically she was fine. The kills and that kind of stuff, she did okay with. It was more just she doesn't like jump scares, and there was those monsters in the castle that popped out at the one point, and there was Wanda popping out at a couple points that got her a little bit, but she did all right with it.
Did the like demon stuff, does that freak her out? Because that stuff was.
I think she was kind of bracing herself for it, but once it was on the screen and it wasn't going to be coming out of nowhere, then she was okay with it. But it was pretty intense. I my 10-year-old son came with us, and he's not fazed by anything. But if you had a kid who was under 12 and hesitant about anything, this movie could really set them off.
Yeah, because there was some stuff. Strange at the end, basically inhabits a body of like a zombie Strange.
Yeah.
Where the demons, there's that really cool shot, and they show it in the trailer where he's kind of up in the air and the demon arms are kind of coming out from his sides. It's an amazing shot. It's so cool. But it's pretty fucking crazy for a kid who might be a big fan of Strange from the original movie and the Avengers, and now he's a zombie with demon arms.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But
and there were some of the more graphic kills. Again, it wasn't bloody too much. There was a lot of that, like you said, Wanda had that blood or something all over her face, but you didn't see, you would have had to go into a rated R territory to have actual blood spurting from these characters. But even the kills, like my wife was gasped a couple times, like when he tosses the evil Strange and he gets impaled on the fence.
Yeah.
And you really see it. And even when they kill the octopus thing at the beginning and it basically tears the eyeball out.
Oh, that was great.
I heard her just say, "Oh, gross." And there was just some really intense stuff like that, but
yeah.
But no, before we get too far off of it, the alternate Captain Americas and Captain Marvels and the Illuminati basically.
Yeah.
Two points of contention there. Number one is, I know that they didn't really get a bridge between this and the last Doctor Strange to explore what was going on with Mordo, because the post credits on that were him basically stealing the power from Benjamin Bratt, as we all have tried to do once in our life.
He achieved the impossible.
But it was set up that he was going to be the next big villain. And then when he meets up with him in this movie, he's like, oh, this guy's been trying to kill me for years. And we're like, has he? I know they didn't really explore that. So, you know, that's a thing. But but my big concern, and it's the same thing that got me with Spider-Man, and I think there's a better excuse for it in this movie, but the multiverse thing is starting to bug me a little bit, where I felt like they were correcting what my issue was in this by having Benedict Cumberbatch play all the different Stranges.
Okay.
Which I like that. And I felt that in Spider-Man there was so much fan service by saying, here's Tobey Maguire and here's Andrew Garfield, and they are also Peter Parker. But what I never understood is why is Peter Parker the same guy with the same name but a totally different genetics, and everything about him is different? It just comes off as fan service. And so I like that when you saw the alternate Stranges, or Christine played by Rachel McAdams, when they were in the different universe, it was them being a different character, but it was the same person. And I like that if they're going to do the multiverse stuff. But then you got to this scene where you had these different characters that I guess still existed. I know in the What If, like, it was what if Peggy got the serum instead of Steve, and so she became the Captain America character, and I guess Captain Marvel, it would have been what if she went down the same path that Carol Danvers was, because they didn't say this is Carol Danvers, they just said it's Captain Marvel. Right. So it was better in this, but then it made me think what happens with Reed Richards, because they're planning to do a Fantastic Four movie. Does that mean we're going to still get John Krasinski, or are they going to say, oh no, he was an alternate universe Reed Richards, and now we're going to have somebody else play him? It's just one of those things. And then that idea that all those guys were there just, I mean, they didn't really set anything up for the future because they all died. So it was, again, just fan service, and it was fun and it was interesting and it was exciting to see them. But in the end, it still amounts to next to nothing. And I don't know. I just feel like all this multiverse stuff, same thing with Spider-Man. In the end, all it amounted to was a way to scrub him from the MCU so that Sony could have their own Spider-Man movies. It hasn't really led to anything yet. And I hope that it does, because they've used it a lot and it's starting to get a little played out to me. And maybe that's just me.
I don't think it's going away.
No, it's not.
I feel like it's, and in a way it's smart, because 10 years down the line, when they're down to their fifth tier heroes, which they do a pretty damn good job of taking these kind of shitty bargain shelf heroes and making them people that we care about. Hell, even Iron Man,
right,
which was their first movie, was not a well-known name when it came out. But eventually they're going to get to the point where they're like, okay, we've exhausted the good stuff. What do?
Yeah.
Boom, multiverse. Here's your new Iron Man. It's Iron Lady.
Yeah.
It's Margaret Thatcher in an awesome metallic costume.
I would care for that.
But yeah, there's good and there's bad. You've pointed out to me, I was so excited when I saw Alfred Molina in the Spider-Man trailer. But you pointed out to me, okay, that's all well and good, but like, they're missing an opportunity to cast a new Doc Ock and a new Green Goblin.
Something interesting with it.
And I suppose they could still do that because it's a multiverse. They could have a different actor play them.
Yeah.
And I mean, Loki puts those possibilities forward. You have an alligator. You have Richard Grant. You have all these different kinds of Lokis.
But then sometimes you get a Loki that is Loki.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's so inconsistent.
But yes, it is inconsistent, and it's a matter of convenience.
Yeah.
For how they do it. I mean, with Spider-Man, it was a matter of like, okay, we can do this, mm-hmm. and it makes sense within the rules that we've set out. And with Strange having Benedict Cumberbatch play all of them, it still makes sense, but it's a matter of convenience, and it's coincidental that it all works out that way. But I don't know. I think going forward, if they handle it correctly, it could be interesting.
Yeah. And either way they do it is fine, and I can make my peace with it. I still think throwing in other actors just to have them there and say, remember this fella, he was in another thing. I think that's a fan service that I could live without, even though it was fun seeing Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, and it was a great spectacle, and again, they handled it well. I do like that they did this with him playing all the different Stranges. I think that just, it makes more sense to me. And I also think it's more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been curious about how they're going to work Deadpool into all of this, because yes. I've heard that they're going to try and stick with sort of the rated R version of Deadpool. And I feel like maybe this gives them that flexibility to say, oh, Deadpool exists in this other universe.
Right.
It's, you know, maybe Matt Murdock shows up at some point, but it's a different Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
So I think they can make that work. Okay. Question.
Yes. Sorry.
Before I forget. The Marvel Comics, the main through line is Earth 616.
Okay.
My understanding, this is getting into the nerdy stuff. My understanding was the MCU was Earth 1, and I had read it, 199999.
Okay.
And that's like the designation of that universe.
From the comics, that is?
No, that was the MCU. The comics were Earth 616.
Okay.
But in this movie, I think somebody references the universe as 616.
They do, yeah. Right? Christine says that.
Which is, well, maybe it's just that particular universe. Because that was one of the alternates, right?
That's what their alternate universe had designated our universe as. So maybe
what had designated the main MCU as.
Right. So hers was 800 something.
Okay.
She said ours was 616 or whatever that the number was. So I mean, it could just be explained that that was what their universe's designation for.
Okay.
The main, but I don't know. That's a good question.
It was just weird that they gave it that specific designation, because my whole thought was that the MCU and Marvel Comics could coexist as different universes because they had their own designations. Do you see what I mean?
I know what you're saying. I didn't realize that was an issue with people.
Yes. It's an issue with me, Chris. Because then it becomes this thing of like, well, this doesn't line up because the X-Men existed in this universe.
Right.
This has already happened in
I Canada. I see, because not so much that you want it to, but they're like in the stories, like something happened in the story that relied on the presence of the X-Men. But now the story makes sense in a different way. Okay.
Like in the comics, Loki never attacked New York with the Chitauri.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just thought it was an odd choice that they were so specific with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you notice in that same scene that she discusses that with him, when he and America are in those glass cages, and Christine is explaining that she's a scientist, and she said she works for the Baxter Foundation, which is the Baxter Building is where the Fantastic Four live and work. And yeah. When she said that, I was like, oh, are we going to get Reed Richards here in a minute? And sure enough.
You sure did.
And then they couldn't get out of those glass cages. And there was some talk about how impenetrable they were. And then when it was an emergency and Christine couldn't get it open and she took something to hit it, and Jeannie looked at me and goes, she can't break that.
She sure did, though. Right?
Well, then America did with her star
power. Oh, that's right.
But she didn't crack it.
She took a fire extinguisher to it. Yeah. It was like, didn't you build these?
Yeah, didn't you just say you couldn't do that? Let's see. Are we missing anything? We've talked a lot about this thing. I don't know. Oh, the other credit scene that we didn't get to was just Charlize Theron is now part of the MCU. Oh,
yeah.
So that was pretty great.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's a whole.
I didn't see that coming. Did you know she was going to be in this?
I didn't know anything about that. So that was a good surprise.
Which 10 years ago wouldn't have cared. But okay. Mad Max, I'm in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Give me as much Charlize as you can.
Actually,
between Mad Max and Arrested Development.
Yeah, that's pretty much my frame of reference for her, too.
I'm on Team Charlize there.
Do you think that going forward, Doctor Strange is just going to constantly have three eyes?
I don't think so. He seemed to be able to make it disappear. Yeah, the other guy could make it appear and disappear.
Yeah.
I don't know why he has it now.
I think
he didn't seem to want to have it necessarily. No,
I think it was remember the other guy said that using the Darkhold extracted a heavy toll. I think that was his punishment for having used it. And I read somewhere that when he first is learning about magic from the Ancient One in the first movie, that she does say, open your eye. Which okay. I think is a real stretch for this, but this person's point was that she doesn't say open your eyes. She specifically says open your eye as though referencing the mystical third eye, whereas this one is like the physical third eye. But it could have been foreshadowing. I doubt it. I think that's more just Sam Raimi as a good friend of the podcast, Nick, said he really likes his eyeballs.
Don't they say in the first Doctor Strange something about how the Ancient One like used dark magic at some point?
She was drawing power from the dark dimension.
Dark dimension, that's right.
Yeah, which is where I believe Charlize Theron was taking him at the end, which I didn't even make that connection, but my daughter pointed it out to me when that portal opened up. She said, that looks like where Dormammu was in the first one.
Yeah.
And I think that is accurate, so.
Okay.
I
like that in a common complaint about the Marvel movies is that at the end of it, it's our hero versus basically a shadow version of themselves.
Yes.
It's Iron Man versus another guy in a iron-ish costume with lasers.
Right. Ant-Man versus Yellow Jacket.
Yes.
Doctor Strange was that way.
Well, they have Doctor Strange versus
Cassilius. Yeah.
But then ultimately the big bad is Dormammu. Mm-hmm. And they have a very strange way of him defeating him.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy. And then this movie was similar in the sense that he's not fighting just the Doctor Strange, but evil.
Yeah.
Even though he does face Doctor Strange, but evil. it does a very different thing, which I credit the movie for.
Strangest fight scene that I'm surprised I didn't lose Jeannie on was the musical showdown.
Yes.
Where they're like throwing musical notes at each other.
That was bizarre, but I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too, but it was the one thing that I thought, oh, this is going to lose some people.
Yeah.
Because it kind of came out of nowhere. There wasn't a real explanation for it, and it was super weird. But again, that's cool. Good for them for doing something different. I don't know if there's much left to say on it. It's pretty great. I do hope we get John Krasinski for the proper Fantastic Four, because I really liked him in that.
If we can get him and wife. Emily Blunt as Sue Storm.
Yep.
Because Emily Blunt, meow. In the words of Matt Johnson, meow.
Meow. Yeah, she's fantastic, and it would be fun to see them together. So that's about it. So any closing thoughts?
No. Okay. Upon discussing it with you, I like this movie even more.
I do too. I'm really excited to see it again and see how it sits with me the second time. Because I feel like, even though I had some issues with the Wanda stuff, that emotional moment at the end with the kids and with the Otherworld Wanda, where she sort of realizes what she's been doing and has a good moment. Really good. And when the alternate one says, you know that they'll be loved. It's just really, really well written and thought out, and very cool. So, all right, well, let's call it a night. Okay. Rob, if anybody's looking for us online, where can they do it?
We are on Pornhub.com. You can follow us on Brazzers on.
Now, there was a surprise that I was not expecting either.
We're on Facebook, where you can like us. We are on Twitter at Two Geeks Movies. You can find us wherever you find your favorite podcasts: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podomatic, and that's about it, folks.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will promise to catch up next week with something about Soho, and
next year in Soho.
Yeah, sometime later in Soho. So thanks for joining us tonight, and we will catch you next time on Two Geeks at the Movies.
Bye, folks.
Bye.